Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Joining me today is, I guess we call him a horror author, James G. Carlson. Thank you for taking the time to talk today.
Thanks for having me.
So, James, let's start out with you. Where did this come from for you? Like, so people know more about you. Did you start out, have you always been a kind of a horror, dark sort of fan since you can remember, or is this something new?
Well, I've always been a fan of horror, but I've only been writing horror for maybe 2.5 years now. Before that, I was actually a music journalist.
Oh. That's a big change.
Huge, yes. Well, I would say I have many passions. Music's one of them. But horror has been one since, I would say, I was 12 years old.
So when you write something, now you're writing these horror tales or stories, do you have something in mind to tell people when you write? Are you just trying to get people creeped out? Or like what's kind of the purpose? So when you sit down, like your new book coming out, Seven Exhumations, when you sat down and wrote that, were you thinking about the outcome or what you want people to get out of it?
Well, I've always been, since I started writing horror, my work has always been dark. But I do sometimes incorporate social themes, not so much political, but certainly social, psychological. I don't like to focus on torture, things like that. I like to basically run with an idea that involves a character and basically puts them through quite a bit. And they will either triumph or end up in more of a nightmare than they begin with.
Great. I want to be a character. No. So how do you pick a character then? Like what kind of a person do you pick? And are you out there looking, you know, like you're about the streets or in the, in a store or a coffee shop or where you're working? And is there someone you see and think, well, that person would be great to be punished or great to be put in this, well, you know, and, or it could also be not that they're awful, but they could be very, cagey and very, very smart. And you might think that person would be a great person in a book. Do you do that, or is this just all imagination?
It is, I would say, maybe 70% imagination, 30%, mannerisms, traits, things like that, borrowed from people I've encountered. Most of it is imagination. In fact, most recently I've enjoyed writing from a female perspective, which I've haven't done before. I can't say that I do it very well, but I have been enjoying it.
Well, how do you take that on? Like, so what do you do to write from a female's point of view? Are you, do you talk to females you know, or do you sort of watch, or do you put yourself in that place of what you would do? That's a really hard thing to do. I hear a lot of people complain, like when we cover other areas, in books, we'll get people that complain, like, how's a woman write about how a man feels, or how's, sometimes I see that go on in the TV world, or how's a straight guy play a gay character, things like that. So what do you do to prep yourself to be a woman?
Well, it's difficult. Well, first of all, I love observation. I have a wife, I have a stepdaughter. At my day job, I encounter a lot of people, and I observe them at length. Also, I've been told that I have a strong feminine side, so I go with that as well.
Oh, okay. So you have something to draw on. That's interesting. Yeah. Now let's talk about that seven exhumations. What's the basic premise of that book?
Okay, well, there are seven tales in all, obviously, and each one takes place in Pennsylvania, my home state, and they're quite different as far as the horrors you encounter in each story. For example, the first one, which was probably my favorite one to write out of the bunch, I was inspired by the adventures I had with my brother in our youth here in Pennsylvania. And it's basically a sentient house that traps the souls of people who enter it, so it doesn't have to be alone. And it's two boys who need to survive that situation.
Hmm. So have you had a lot of experience with paranormal and ghosts and stuff? Is this sort of something you delve into, not only in your books, but outside of it?
I wouldn't say I've had a lot of experience, though I'm very open to any possibility.
Right. But being open is one thing, but when you actually include that sort of, souls being trapped and stuff, so do you sort of think that there is something spiritual that you want to put into your books?
Well, I am somewhat religiously preoccupied, I admit, although I'm not religious. In this particular story, however, there's no spirituality. It's mainly a house that has it's self-aware, but it's also corrupt and maybe a bit mad, actually.
Oh, there you go. So that's pretty interesting. So at the end of these seven stories, so is this like a fun fest? Do you want this to people to come out of it? How do you want them to feel? I guess that's the best way to say it.
Okay. Perhaps a bit shaken, but also I try to write with a certain amount of maybe a little bit of poetry here and there and make it enjoyable. I wish I could incorporate more humor, but that's not really my strong suit in writing.
Well, it's kind of a dark humor. Some people, that really works for some people. You just got to give it a try. You never know. That's pretty interesting. So who do you read? Who influences you?
Oh, wow. Mainly, first and foremost, I would say Clive Barker. He's my favorite author probably of all time.
Wait, did you have a particular reason? Like, what does Clive Barker do that makes you follow everything or be your favorite?
Okay, well, his imagination is just boundless. There's so much that comes from there, and his ability to tell the tale is amazing, absolutely amazing.
What in a tale is the most important thing? So when you say, you know, like he has a great imagination and he can tell a really good tale. So when you try to write something or when you put something out, what's the most important thing in your writing then? The story?
I would say it's equal parts story and the delivery of the story or conveyance of the story. Although I have to admit that my imagination is far superior than my ability to tell the story. But I guess that improves over time.
Yeah, that's actually a particular thing that I think everyone feels as a writer, or most do, because the ability to write, when you actually sit down and write, then you realize that, you can't express yourself in correct English or properly, and putting it together is not always the easiest, but it gets better each time you do it.
It does. That is very true. In the past 2 years, I've been in short stories in maybe about a dozen anthologies, and I find myself improving during the process of each story. So it's been a learning process for sure.
Yeah, you'll find I've been doing that since I started, and I think that what happens is you just start developing your skills and technique at writing. But remember, you don't have to be the best writer per se. Mm. What it is you've got something to say, and when you have something to say, you need to put it out, or something in a book or whatever, music, whatever you're doing. So I think that's the key to it. You know, you don't have to be the ultimate writer, you know, as long as you get your point across, I think, and it gets better.
Oh, absolutely.
So in the world today, now when we are going through all of this weird stuff, you know, the COVID and the Black Lives Matter protests, shooting, you know, anti-maskers and Trump and all of this stuff going on right now, does that affect your writing?
I suppose the anxious climate of America certainly plays into it, because obviously whatever we feel will find its way into our writing. That's inevitable. So in some of my stories, yeah, they get a bit dark. Those fears and anxieties are present, never specifically expressed, but they're certainly there.
Yeah, I would imagine. It certainly affects when I'm writing. I definitely approach it from a darker point. Now, so with that being said, do you ever get kind of a block or a place sometimes where you don't feel like writing or you can't write?
I think at this point in my early fiction career, my only difficulty is being time challenged to find the time to write. Like I said, I do have a day job and I have a family and far too many pets. So I do try to find time to write. And if I could, I'd write endlessly. There's sometimes I will sit down to write and I'll go for 9-10 hours.
Well, that's good. I just wonder, like, because if for me, I know if I schedule time, it never works for me. Mm. Like if I sit there and say, okay, I've got 2 o'clock to 8 o'clock on Friday open. So I say, I'm going to write. And if I go to sit down at 2 o'clock to write, most of the time it doesn't work.
Right. No, I get that. Yeah, I'm very much a creature of habit. I have specific routines and rituals and so forth. So I try to go out and exercise in the morning, and then when I come back, I'll make a cup of coffee and sit at my laptop and write for as long as my imagination and my energy will allow me to.
That's good. I mean, it sounds like you're doing the right thing. What do you recommend for other writers? Would you if someone else that's starting out, what would be the thing you tell, the one thing that they should do the most, do you think?
Well, one of the most difficult things for a writer is self-doubt, in my experience. And the trick is to just do it, despite the self-doubt, despite the negative self-talk that you maybe can't do this and other people will appreciate it. Just do it. See what happens. At the end of the day, you won't regret it. Also, remove yourself from distractions, because distractions, I've heard, and I believe it to be so, is they are the enemy of creativity.
Well, there you go. I think it's true. The self-doubt will never leave.
Right.
Just so you know. You'll always feel like you're a fake, or someone's going to find out.
True.
You know, that doesn't end. I've been doing it for a long time, and each time you do a book, it still feels that way. It's weird. But, you know, you just got to keep on doing what you do and not worry about it, I guess.
Exactly.
So, no, that's a good thing. So classic horror or modern day horror, like, what do you like best when you, and I mean this in not just books, but let's say stories and even shows, like, do you find yourself attracted to Frankenstein and Dracula and some of the old real classics, The Mummy, or do you prefer the way people write now?
I must admit that I'm a big fan of both. I grew up with early horror, 80s and 90s horror, but I still love it. The stuff that's being produced and released today, it's fantastic. Books and movies and television, big fan of all three. And in fact, I've read several books this year that kind of blew me away in terms of the talent and the imagination. So the genre is still going strong.
Oh, yeah. It's quite an enterprise now. I was just wondering if you, some people kind of go one way or the other, and they look into something and they go, well, I love the way the classics wrote, or, you know, something like that. Or, but yeah, it's definitely a good business now. Do you ever think you'll get into something else? Do you ever think you could cross over into a different type, like a romance? No, I mean, just...
Romance, probably not.
No.
I have written a science fiction story for an anthology last year, which I had a lot of fun doing that. That I find it takes more research to write a science fiction novel, or, excuse me, a short story, even a novel, but than horror, because horror is, it can be absurd, it can be utterly impossible, but with science fiction, you need to do some research to make it believable. And I like fantasy a lot as well.
Well, you know, they're kind of related, like first
they
cousins,
are.
You know. I think that, yeah. So when you do your stories, are you doing modern day stories, or are you doing something that happened in the 50s?
My stories take place either in the 90s or present day. In my current collection, Seven Exhumations, the seven stories take place mostly today, but there are a few that take place, and actually one takes place in the future, and one takes place in the 90s.
Wow. So that does take a little bit of research when you go back a little bit in time.
It does. Yeah, absolutely. No cell phones, no, the technology was very different.
Yeah, you do have to be, yeah, because it has to be somewhat realistic, so,
right.
You know, it's kind of crazy. So so do you like blood and guts, too, and all that stuff? Is that part of the way you write?
That's not the main focus. It has its part, for sure, but it's not my main focus. My main focus is to it's to be hoped that the reader will attach to the main character and want to see what happens to them throughout the story. And if blood and guts do occur, then that's great. But otherwise, as long as I can write a character that you care about and want to see what happens to them, I'm perfectly happy with that. And that's my goal.
Now, the other cast members, the other characters in the book surrounding your main character is going through some sort of an event or horror or some sort of thing is happening to that person. So the characters that support this person, where do they come from? Are they come from a different place? Do you just fictionalize, like totally create someone that's going to do something? Maybe explain that process.
Okay. Well, my incidental characters, I try to give them as much of the stage, so to speak, as possible. But they're born from imagination, just like my main characters, and they either help that main character along the way, or they kind of hinder their progress as not necessarily an enemy, but certainly an obstacle.
Wow. Do you like the kind of writing where there's an opposing, like there's an evil force that your character has to deal with, and that evil force is actually another character rather than something like spiritual or something that we don't really know. It's not a living being, so to speak. So do you like having kind of an evil character in your book?
I do, on occasion, yes. I have one that will actually hopefully be out this February in another collection of short stories, in which I have just a human being, just totally rotten and evil, and a young person has to face off with this person and hopefully survive. I'm not really big on slasher writing or serial killer writing and so forth, but this one kind of just popped into my head and I had to write it. And it takes on a fantasy aspect as well. It's called Bloom and Rot. And hopefully, like I said, it will be out in February.
So do you write with these short stories, do they usually get out in magazines or do they go out on their own?
Most of them are in anthology books. There's been several. I've worked with Gypsum Sound Tales out of Australia. I've been in three of their anthologies. Grinning Skull Press, I was in their holiday horror anthology. Several others. And it's been interesting working with indie presses to see which ones I would like to continue working with in the future, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They each have their own style, their own editing format, you might say, and it's all sort of either got to work with you or it doesn't, you know.
Right.
And stuff like that. So do you like doing these short stories then? Is that kind of more of a favorite of yours than doing, a full novel?
Well, I'm currently working on a full novel. I just take several breaks in between to, you know, write short stories to keep material coming out there. And also I find the novel process quite long. Well, I can write a short story in 2 or 3 weeks, whereas my current novel has been, almost a year now in progress, and it's not even halfway finished yet.
So what is it that takes you a long time to write a certain stories? Like what is it that takes longer? Is it more of an emotional feeling that you're getting, or is it, I don't know if you kind of get what I'm saying. Like in my writing, I do a lot of true crime murder sort of stories. So I'm basing it on what happened, and it's about finding the evidence. So that's what takes the time. In yours, it's coming from your mind. So why would it help me to understand that? Why does one story take so much longer than the other? Like, what is it about the process?
Well, I think several reasons. The first of which probably is, you know, the general novel, 60 to 100,000 words or whatever count you want to place on it. It's a much larger undertaking than writing one, say, 5,000 to 10,000 words. So you really need to stretch that story out.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Out and keep it entertaining from start to finish. You need to really work on character development, pacing, add some scenes that will really, really keep the reader absorbed. So that's my focus, and I want to do it properly, so I've been taking my time with it. While with a short story, I introduce a character, I basically put the situation out there that they have to overcome, and then put them through the motions there. And while it's very entertaining, it's also it's a short burst of entertainment. So I find that much easier in comparison to writing a novel.
Well, yeah, it's quite a process. So now I have to ask this because I ask this of most writers. So in fiction anyway, when you have these characters, do you ever put someone in that you know that you'd like to see them killed? Don't mean that morbidly, but you know, have you ever had, you know, you're waiting in a line at a store and someone's really rude to you and just nasty, and you're like, you get up in your car and you go, wow, what a cow, you know, and you really think, wow, what an awful person, and it bothers you and stuff like that. Do you ever take, because I get this from certain writers say, yeah, if you piss me off, if you do something really bad to me, I'll take you and I'll put you in the book and I'm going to kill you off. And there's some that, you know, JD said, there's some really good writers that do that. And I'm just wondering, does that ever happen in your writing?
You know, it may have, unconsciously. I've taken someone that I've found pretty much detestable, in real life, and incorporated that into my stories and they've met a terrible fate. But I've never done that consciously, honestly. I'm a strange horror writer in the sense that my imagination is very dark and disturbing. But in real life, I am actually a pretty passive and peaceful individual.
Well, I mean, I can understand that. It could just be an outlet, you know.
Oh, sure.
It could be a way of, you know, of being that way. You know, because when I was young, you know, our cartoons were quite violent in a sense. When I was young. And so I look at it now and I think, well, a lot of these probably could never be played nowadays because it's, you know, against the way the world thinks. But it doesn't mean that you're a bad person. I mean, you know, it's not like you're doing it in real life, at least that we know of.
No, I'm the type of individual that will, if I find a bug in my house, I'll take it outside.
Yeah, I do that too. Like that. People think that's weird, but I'm not really into killing things.
No.
Just because it's something I don't like. So yeah, if you see a bug, I'm not prone to go kill it.
Exactly.
You know, stuff like that. Mind you, I was visiting some relatives in Arizona and they had these big pet spiders, you know, big, huge things, big as your hand. And I'm kind of like I'm not scared of them, but I don't like them. And I could just typically be sitting on a couch. And if I saw this big spider, I might step on it. It's just, you know, out of reaction. And I'm thinking, well, I better not do that. That's their pet. But yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, people are, you know, it's a funny world we live in. So,
oh, it is.
So explain that. So where do people find you? So you have a website, right? So tell everybody where they can find you.
Okay. Well, my website it's at WordPress under James Carlson, and you'll find a list of the anthologies I've been in. The upcoming collection of short stories will be available at terrortract.net and also at Amazon. We were aiming for a Halloween release, but it looks more like it will be in November because the editor is still hard at work on that one.
Yeah, you know, things always they can go that way. You know, it's not always as planned. You know, one thing, you never mentioned Stephen King. Is that you're not a fan, or are you a fan?
I'm a fan. I'm not as crazy about him as some, but I really respect and admire him as an author. I've read a lot of his work, actually, and in fact, my favorite story of his is The Talisman. I think he wrote it with Peter Straub many years ago. I thought that was pretty great. But I've read The Stand, It, etc., and he's a phenomenal writer. But in the horror genre, Clive Barker remains my favorite. He's still at it, Clive Barker. He's making a comeback. But there's some new authors that really have impressed me as well.
Well, that's a good thing. You know, Stephen King, you know, he's a great writer, but I don't know why. Most of his movies suck.
Sometimes the books don't make great adaptations. I've noticed that with Clive Barker as well. His books are brilliant, but the movies tend to do the books a great disservice.
Yeah, it's hard to to make the transition from a book to a movie. Plus, they don't spend enough money on it. You know, they don't.
True.
You know, that's the problem. You need to put a lot of money in it to make something like that a good event. You know.
True.
I see that with comics a lot too. Like if you know The Walking Dead to the show. I mean, it's sometimes you look at the characters and think, well, how stupid? Why wouldn't you? You know, how do you get trapped when the zombies walk really slow? It's, you know, because they try to put them in a dark, closed-in space, so they have to fight a zombie. But in the comic, it works. But to do it on TV sometimes doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't always translate very well. I was a fan of The Walking Dead when it first began and probably lost interest around season 4 or 5 and haven't watched it since.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that happens. I think they beat it to death, right? They take these shows and then they just go too far and too many years and too many characters come and go. And it just, they're just keeping it going almost and kind of loses its interest. They did that with Dexter too, I think.
They did. However, it's coming back.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I'm back and forth on that because it went too long. They were kind of grasping at some sort of a story to keep it going. And I think the first 4 seasons were fine, maybe 5, and then that's enough. You know, then they tried to wrap it all up at the end too quickly.
That happens.
You know, and that's kind of, you know. So, you know, but this has the original group from the first 4 years, so maybe it'll turn out good, you know. They certainly have the ability. It's just we'll have to wait and see, you know. Are you a fan of stuff like Netflix and all the streaming service?
To a point, yes. It's difficult to comb through all the things I don't like in order to find the gem that I should be watching that evening. So it takes a lot of searching to get to something worthwhile. That's my only gripe with Netflix, Amazon. Although I have been really enjoying Shudder recently.
Yeah, I just got that. I haven't really tuned in much, but I just signed up for it and a few others. But, you know, it's almost a free-for-all. There's so much stuff on there now that it's tough to... you know, because sometimes you think, oh, that'll be good, and you stick it on, and it's just awful.
Oh, yeah. I've had that experience many times.
Yeah. There's just a lot of garbage on there. It's almost like no, there's just no standard. It just we'll stick it all on there, and whatever you like, you know.
Yeah, just loads of content, so everyone has something to choose from.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't blame them. I guess it's tough, too, now with COVID. A lot of productions shut down and slowed down, and so... things are kind of, they just have to start filling it with stuff, you know.
That is true. Although, from what I've learned, more people are reading during the pandemic than before, which is, you know, it's pretty nice for writers.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I think that, I think people have to read more, and I'd love to see younger people read more because it's so easy to do texts and emails that are not written. We don't write texts and emails like properly, right? Like it's not like writing a letter. We just sort of shoot abbreviations so I think we get really sloppy at our writing. It's not very formatted, you might say. And so I think reading is good. People can, learn to communicate better. That's a good thing.
Absolutely. I frustrate people with my text because I punctuate them and I don't really abbreviate much. So they think I'm pretty strange in that regard.
No, that's great because I know so many writers that I get all these abbreviations and letters, and I'm getting old. I don't admit it, but you know, I'm getting, I'm 58. Oh my God. It's kind of weird because then I get these things and it's like, okay, I don't know what that means. So then I have to go online and look up all the abbreviations. So it takes me just as long.
Sure. Sure. It makes perfect sense. Yeah.
But we all have our thing, but I don't know. It's crazy. The world's changing. So
it really is.
So what's next for you? When is this 7 Exhumations coming out?
It will be out next month, for sure, in November, through Terror Tract Publishing. Hopefully second or third week of November.
Okay. Well, you know, keep us informed on that, because what I'll do is I'll also put that up on our website. I'll put you up on the website, so people listening, they can find you if they forget your name or whatever. They can just go and one click and get to your webpage and stuff. And then when the book comes out, we'll post that as well so people can help find it as well if they forget or something. You know, it's all good. What's your plans? You're going to keep on writing like this? You've got lots of stories. How many stories do you have going at a time usually?
Well, it varies depending upon deadline or what I've been asked to do. Right now I have a novella, a novel, and a short story in the works. The short story is due next month. The novel is just whenever it's finished, whenever I'm happy with it. The novella is on its second rewrite because I love the story, but not the way I've written it. So I keep going over it. It's been an agonizing process, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's the hard thing. You know, so why don't you like it? Is it because of your own self-doubt? Is it that kind of thing when you is it the way it's outlined and you kind of go, oh, that's not good? Is it come from you, or does it come from just, do you think, the way it reads?
I think it's the way it reads, because I don't think that the way it's written does the story justice, because it's a I love the story. I just don't love the way I'm conveying the story. I think it needs just to be, it deserves a proper writing is what it comes down to.
Well, do you think people will not grasp or get the point as well as you want them to? Is that it?
I think it's more of a personal thing. I think people would understand it and maybe appreciate it, but I'm just not willing to release it as it currently is, because personally, it's just not reading the way I'd like.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, you're really concerned on how it turns out.
Like, oh, absolutely.
It has to be a particular way. And then that's good. That's really good. Because some people are not quite that. Do you ever fight with editors?
Actually, I haven't had any fights with editors yet. Well, I did when I was in journalism, but never in fiction yet. But I've been rejected several times for various things, and I actually have found rejection very helpful in moving my writing forward. You know, while most people want to give up when they get rejections, it makes me want to work harder, and it makes me want to make the story better and make the characters better. So it's proven invaluable in my process.
Well, I think that's one big secret that a lot of people don't get, or key to it, is I think when you get negativity, when you get negative reviews or negative, rejections from a publisher or an editor or people that say bad things about you, to be able to take that negative energy and turn it into something creative is really the process. It's the secret. It's the key item. And that's something I learned a long time ago, and it's not easy to do. But I think that's a really important aspect for someone, that if they want to keep doing their writing or music or whatever for a long period of time, they've got to be able to do that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, a lot of editors, they pour through numerous manuscripts and short stories on a daily basis, and they know what people would like to read and how they'd like to read them. So I take their advice to heart when I get it, and it usually improves my stories a lot.
Yeah, usually the editor just wants it to be a better book. They're not in it to hurt you, I don't think. Most of them do want it to become better. You know, I think I got into a few battles with some editors back in probably my third or fourth book, because I kind of had a bit of a chip on my shoulder too, right? after you've done a few that have done well, then you kind of come back thinking, well, I know it all.
Well,
what a mistake. Because you don't, you know. It's just part of the process, I guess. But I learned quickly. I look back at that as kind of, oh, that was a learning lesson. And, it's better now. But, yeah, overall, most of the editors, I think, just want it to be something better. You have to go with it, you know.
Well, I got to say, what you write is probably more of a chore to edit, because it's all factual. True crime is difficult, and that's where the true horror is with true fiction, because it actually happened. And That's really mind-blowing stuff.
Yeah, I think the hardest part is when you go around and meet families, you go around and meet people that were involved in it, that have suffered the loss, that have been through the horror, and seeing how it stays with them for 20 years. You know, it just doesn't, it doesn't change. I think that's the hardest part of it. But no, the editing actually can take a while, because most publisher edits will go through and verify all the numbers, the dates, the facts, the names, and that can be really time consuming. Not so much the grammar. We do get that.
Sure.
You know, at times, you know, or they suggest some things, the way it's put, because sometimes you could write it and not realize you're being kind of, kind of hard, kind of gross, or kind of, it's a little bit too graphic maybe.
You know? Yeah, I get it. Yeah, absolutely. You
know, I mean, because there's members of the family still alive, like that last book I put out, and there's people that, you know, if you get into the assault, the rape, and the killing of two girls, and you're like, you know, how far do you go? You want people to understand what the person did, but you don't have to be too salacious. You know, there's that fine line.
Of course, yeah.
You know, so I think that's the aspect of in my kind of writing that you have to worry about. And of course, then you get some writers that just don't care. They'll just put out whatever, you know.
True. I think the last true crime fiction nonfiction I've read was Truman Capote's In Cold Blood. So it's been a long time.
I'd say, but that, yeah. You know, he had a big influence, because he classically changed the way people wrote. He made it not just the facts kind of man, that story. He actually turned it into a, literature. He turned it into a story, something you can flow and follow through. Because before him, a lot of writers would just, here's the date, here's the person, this is what they did, this is where they came from, and this is what happened kind of thing. And there was no real, it was like reading a police report.
Right, exactly. And you know, if you can combine true events with art, my hat's off to you. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's hard. And sometimes it really works and sometimes it doesn't, because,
right,
you know, you have to put a, you have to be the voice that takes people through the events. And that,
yeah,
that can be tricky, because, especially, and these days, you know, when people are so divided, there's so much fighting, and you kind of have to be really careful how you present things, you know. It's kind of weird, but it's all good.
Absolutely.
Yep. <You know? laughs> I could be, you know, doing something worse, that's for sure. So I'll tell you. So that's great. I really appreciate this, and we'll have everything up for people. Any last words for listeners?
No, just, look out for Seven Exhumations. It will be out in November from Terror Tract Publishing, and I hope you enjoy it.
Oh, I'm sure they will. It's you know, that'll be great. Well, again, our guest has been James G. Carlson, and he's the horror author. His latest book comes out in early November. We'll have that up as well, and that's Seven Exhumations. Thank you very much for being on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.